Hello, I'm Liz Bogo, and welcome to Reflections on Life. Today, I'm really pleased to have with me Larry Carson, who was a former reporter for the Baltimore Sun, and who covered me when I held public office at the county and possibly the state level. Larry has a real commitment to and skill in honing in on what issues are of most importance and what we should know about as people that's going on in our cities and states and in our communities. So welcome, Larry. I'm really happy to have you, you here with me today.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Good. So tell me, when did you first know that you wanted news coverage reporting to be, I think it's safe to call it your life's work. Is that safe?
Yeah, well, it ended up being that, but it, like so many other people, I think I almost fell into it. But I came to work for the News American in 1966 for a couple of years on and off, and was a police reporter. And so I was on the streets during the Martin Luther King riot. And then I went to work for the Evening Sun in January of 1969. And the first place they sent me was Howard County. So I covered Howard County for about a year and a half back then. And Route 29 was one lane in each direction. They were just beginning to work on expanding it. And Wild Lake was the only village in Columbia that was there. And we had an office in the Wild Lake Village Center on the second floor. And then years later, after working for the Evening Sun for many years, and then that merged with the Baltimore Sun, I came back to cover Howard County at the end of 1998 when Jim Robey was taking office, and then covered the county until I retired. And so I retired in 2011, so that's like 10 years ago. But I can personally attest to the decline of local news coverage because I experienced a lot of it. And I've been around, I live in the county, so I've been around since I retired and have seen things get even worse.
Well, I agree with you as seeing it as getting worse. I'm not sure if everyone agrees with us, but it is a tremendous loss to me in the depth that I used to be able to go into printed media to follow, you know, what's going on in our county and then also in the state and in the world.
Well, just as an example, I can explain to you that when I first came to the Howard County Bureau of the Sun in December of 1998, there were 9 reporters, 2 editors, and 1 editorial assistant. And we had offices here in Columbia. And we produced stories every day that appeared in the Sun. And then there was a Sunday edition of the Howard Sun, which had additional stories. And the Columbia Flyer was a completely different, separately owned operation. By the time I left in mid-2011, I was the only news reporter covering Howard County, and other than sports, and I was working from my basement, but I had to live in Columbia, so they had eliminated the office, they had eliminated all the editors, they had eliminated everything. So it was just me working out of my basement, and I would try to go to as many things as I could, but in the 10 years since I retired, I don't think anybody goes to, well, of course, a lot of public meetings aren't held during the pandemic. They're all virtual, but they're not using Sun reporters to cover Howard County or Carroll or Hartford or Anne Arundel. They're using the Patuxent reporters because the people that own the Sun also bought the weekly paper. So they're using the weekly reporters, but they don't let them mix with the Sun reporters. They use the stories interchangeable, but the reporters don't mix in. They're paid very poorly and they leave after a year or two. And so there's very little effort to dig out stories that aren't obvious. So I think that's a huge loss in Howard County. One of the big issues out here is land use, and nobody's covering land use anymore. You don't see anything about zoning board decisions or planning board decisions or any of that stuff.
That's so true. I can see that as an observer, and including, you know, right now at this very time in the county's in the county's history. Is Howard County typical of what counties across the state and the country are experiencing now as far as news coverage, particularly of local news?
I think that's true, except for perhaps the New York Times and the Washington Post. And of course, the Washington Post covers Northern Virginia as well as Montgomery and Prince George's County. And they have actually grown their operations nationally in the last 4 years because of all the turmoil and chaos produced by the Trump administration, it gained readers. And so that's enabled them. Plus, of course, the Post is owned by the wealthiest man in the world. So they've got the resources to add staff, whereas everybody else is losing. The Sun was purchased this past summer by a hedge fund, which has absolutely no interest in journalism. They're only interested in making a profit. So I think that's to our detriment over time. It's going to be bad news.
Well, as someone who's never worked as a reporter, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's definitely to our detriment. We happen to subscribe to both the Post and the Sun still. The Sun has very sketchy delivery. But I think it was a good paper. My mother was born and raised in Baltimore and was a big fan and lover of Baltimore City and all that was good about it. And I'm glad that she is no longer living to see the demise of the Sun. She'd be brokenhearted by it. But it's not about broken hearts. It's about being well-informed at a time when I think it's more important than ever that people be well-informed, and that maybe every generation believes that. But I think we are in times that it's just very important that we know what's going on.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate downward spiral, and it began around 2003, somewhere in the early 2000s, when the internet took over and the classified ads, which used to be in the newspaper. If you wanted to buy something, you'd get a paper and look in the ads, but Craigslist is free and it's online. So nobody's going to pay $25 for a three-line newspaper ad if they can put it on Craigslist. Everybody's going to see it on their phone. So there have been tremendous declines in advertising revenue, and that led to reductions in staff over time. Tribune bought the Sun in 2000, and between then and the time they sold it, they dropped the number of journalists from about 400 to about 80.
400 to 80?
Yeah.
Over what period of time?
Over a decade. And so that obviously has produced consequences. I mean, here in Columbia, just as an example, you may remember a year ago, August, there was a gas explosion that blew up an office building in East Columbia.
I do remember it.
Off Snowden River Parkway, and completely destroyed most of the building, which was covered, of course, since explosions always get covered. But a year later, there had not been any, nobody had said anything about rebuilding the building. There was no follow-up coverage. And there had been a Social Security office in that building, which closed when the place exploded. And if you had to go to Social Security, then you had to go across Route 100 all the way to Glen Burnie to the office over there. This was before the pandemic. So there was nothing being said about it. I sent an email to the guy's publisher of the Sun, Triff Atlasis. He's an old, longtime Sun. And he did get him to do a story, but they didn't even mention the Social Security office.
I don't remember that part of it. I know. There was a Social Security office in that building
from the times
that I had been in the building, but I didn't realize that we had lost that.
Yeah, well, it may be reestablished now, but of course, with the virus, you can't go places. Yeah. A lot of places don't let the public in anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the type of thing that we would have routinely covered before that we just don't.
And I don't see how anyone could disagree with the fact that that is a real loss to the public.
Right.
To not have access to that knowledge that was so easily accessible before. Let me ask you this. What about other nations? Does the United States stand out? We're not standing alone in this, are we?
I doubt it. I don't know in detail anything about any other countries, but I think everything that is produced in print is in decline. Now, of course, there's still plenty of books in the library, but I think a lot of authors self-published books online. You know, there are different ways to do it, just like the music business. You know, you don't buy CDs anymore. You get it through streaming. You get music through streaming. So I think technology has affected everything, completely changed the ability to make a profit in a lot of fields, and print is one of the primary ones. So I think it's probably a worldwide phenomenon, but because people don't, I've like when we travel and I'm in an airport, I'll bring our Washington Post with us to finish reading it while I'm waiting for the plane to take off, and I'll deliberately leave it on a seat. Nobody picks it up. They're all sitting there looking at their phones. Nobody wants to read the paper. So I think that's a change in the way people behave.
And it's
an unfortunate one, because I think it makes us more vulnerable to propaganda. And I think that's the other major problem that we're seeing now with the dissemination of information. And that is that places like Fox News and the right-wing echo chamber, basically, they'll just repeat lies, like the Trump lie about the election being stolen. And in fact, he's the one who's trying to steal the election. So you can't talk to people who don't believe you, who don't trust you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so they don't rely on facts or reality. They just go by what they hear, which is propaganda.
That's where I was going to go next, actually, and that is the impact on the access that people have to very basic fundamental news. And does doing it more through technology now, or almost all through technology, does that also have an impact on economic discrimination? That people who, are more well off financially?
I don't know, because I think almost everybody's got a portable phone.
No matter how?
These days. Okay. There are some people who don't, obviously, but I don't know if that's a matter of whether they can afford it or whether it's a matter of just not being comfortable with technology. There are probably some older people, but I found almost everybody I come in contact with has a phone of some sort.
Do you have much hope? If you're turning this around?
There's always hope, but if you can't solve the revenue problem, if you can't get the advertising revenue, then I don't think that traditional newspapers will ever come back. Now, they may not die completely, but there are efforts to provide information online. There's a website called the Baltimore Brew, BREW, that does stories primarily about Baltimore City. And they only have a few, they don't have like staff reporters. They have a few people who contribute to it. There's one called Maryland Matters that tries to take a state view, and they have a small staff. And then, of course, Stuart Bainum, who's a wealthy person from Montgomery County, used to be in the House of Delegates, is planning to start a new online service called the Baltimore Banner sometime next year. And Stuart had tried to buy, initially wanted to buy the Sun and thought he had a deal, but then the Tribune sold it instead to a hedge fund. And so it didn't work out. He tried to buy all the papers that Tribune owned, but he couldn't get the money together for that. And so now he's planning to try to start his own news service, and we'll have to see how that works out. I hope that he'll be able to have enough people, and I'm sure it'll take a few years, but have enough of a staff in order to have an impact. Because places like Howard County certainly have problems that need to be discussed publicly, but they won't be, and then you're more subject to rumor and innuendo and misinformation when they're not. So we'll have to wait and see. Currently the county zoning board is considering, for example, a plan by the Erickson Company to build a new retirement community on Route 108 in Clarksville. I haven't ever seen anything about that in the paper. There's lots of things going on in the county. I drove past the Oakland Mills Village Center the other day, and I noticed the lot where the gas station used to be that's been vacant for 10 years has some kind of a sign on it. So it's one of those signs that indicate there's a plan to do something with it, but I don't know what the plan is. Nobody's ever written about it. The signs give you these letters and numbers, and you have to try to figure out where that is on the county's website, which I haven't figured out yet, but I'd be interested. That was a key site. I always thought that there ought to be something built there, but nobody's wanted to do it. So I'd be interested to read about it. I'm sure other people would as well.
I would too. And I also think that when I was in my various stages of holding public office at the local and the state level, I learned from reading the paper what was going on sometimes. Sure. And I paid pretty close attention. And I don't mean to say that anybody was trying to pull the wool over my eyes on anything, but it's just, I would read, either coverage by you or somebody from the Washington Post, and the good reporting, when we had good reporting, and we did have very good reporting.
And we still do. There are still good stories, but there's just not enough people doing the work to produce the volume of stories that we used to have. I always remember reading about Henry Mankin's book about his early days in the newspaper business in Baltimore in 1903 or 1905. And in those days, the reporter, he didn't have a telephone, he didn't have a car. He would go with the police officer and walk around with him. So they went to this flop house. This guy had died. And as the officers looking around, he found the guy had squirreled away $400 in cash. So
which was a lot of money then.
Yeah, well, so There's nobody there, right? I mean, you could just pocket that and nobody would ever know it, or split it. And I don't remember which way it worked, but it made me think about how much more information we have access to now than we did 100 or 120 years ago. And so in the long term, you know, we may not be as bad off as we were then, but there may not be as much corruption as there was then. But it's easier generally for people to get away with stuff, and people being people, they're always going to try to get away with things if they don't think that anybody's watching or looking.
H.L. Mencken was a, you know, I guess the home in downtown Baltimore.
Sure.
That's, it was, my mom was such a huge fan of him and a huge fan of Baltimore. Well, when people mention to me sometimes, I'm not involved in depth in anything actually in government at the local or the state level, but I am paying attention and I do participate and follow what's going on. And they say, you know, what can we do to have a better understanding of what's ahead? You know, what should we be watching out for? Not only what should we be watching out for that might be of concern or that might be troubling, but what are some of the good things that are happening we're not hearing about? I don't know where to direct them, and possibly you don't either.
I don't know. I mean, I think if people want to take the time to search websites or blogs or, you know, and try to glean some information on their own, then they can write letters or op-ed pieces. They can call the newspaper and say, hey, I found out this happened. I think it's newsworthy. Maybe you could do a story about it. Those are some things that people can do. But obviously, you can't be a reporter on your own. People are busy. They have lives, especially now with the pandemic going on. You have all these issues, kids at school, masks, vaccinations, holidays coming up. You know, can you be close to people or not? You know, there's life is way so much more complicated than it used to be.
That's certainly true. How about you personally? How satisfied are you with your ability to get the amount of news that you want about what's going on?
Well, I'm not satisfied at all. I was there was an incident in Baltimore City, for example, that struck me on July 19th. There was a 64-year-old man riding a motor scooter on Forest Park Avenue. And a couple of guys apparently wanted the scooter and shot him to death. His name was Varelas Nettles. And it was a one-day story. And the police had a surveillance picture of the two suspects. It was very clear. You could see their faces. I haven't heard another word about it. But it made me think about an incident back in 1981 when Victor First was riding a moped in Woodlawn, and a couple kids in a car came up alongside of them, and just one of them just pointed a gun at him and killed him. And there was a huge outcry about that. And it was the start of the whole victims' rights and movement in Maryland.
When was that?
1981. His widow, Rita First, she came to Annapolis, and there were laws passed about taking care of victims and making support for victims. But this guy got killed, and it was a one-day story. The mayor said it's a tragedy, and then the next day you never heard another word about it. So those are the kind of things that in the old days, the Sun probably would have had a reporter follow up on.
Well, you've seen a lot of change. I've seen a lot of change. I guess there's a lot more we'll be adapting to in change as time goes by.
I guess.
But I do think it's...
We may not be there to see it.
Well, at some point we won't be, and I'm going to be there ahead of you.
You never know.
That's true. You never know. But it troubles me. You know, this situation troubles me. And I believe, I've always chosen to believe that people are basically good. And now that I'm in my advancing years, I still believe people are basically good. But it's also important that we be as well informed as possible.
Right.
And we are simply not.
Right.
So it's troubling. And I really appreciate your insights. And I also very much appreciate the years that you put in to working in the printed media.
Well, I enjoy doing it very much, but I'm also enjoying...
Well, I'm happy to hear that.
Being retired.
I'm happy to hear that.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's not a direct impact on news coverage, but I think one of the things that will help is the Fair Elections program that Howard County adopted a few years ago, it's a small donation public financing system for candidates, for county council and county executive. And I think it will help get more people to run for office because they won't need as much money. And I think that it will help gather people's interest because they'd be looking for small donations that can be matched or tripled or quadrupled by this fund. So I'm hopeful that that will be something that is a trend that will grow. I mean, Baltimore County is trying to do the same thing now, and Montgomery County did it before us. And this coming election next year is the first one that we'll have.
I have truthfully have not paid a lot of attention to that. I'll look into it more closely. I think that we owe, whether you live in Columbia or not in Howard County, we owe a huge debt of gratitude to Jim Rouse for the way he planned. You know, long time out, like he built. He didn't just put up all the houses and then, oh, what are we going to do about traffic? What are we going to do about the schools? He really planned it, and we happen to live in the enjoyment of that great work that he did. So, well, I've enjoyed this very much.
I understand the situation
a little bit more. I have a lot more to learn, and I look forward to staying in touch with him.
Okay, great.
And thank you, seriously, for your many years of such good journalism.
Well, you're very welcome.
So, Larry, how long has it been since you have, quote, retired?
Been a little over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I've found through a couple of my retirement activities that there are ways to learn things about the county that I wouldn't have known about otherwise. One of them is I'm a volunteer driver for NeighborEye. That's Howard County's transportation system for seniors who don't drive.
Yeah.
And so through that, I've been doing that since I retired for about 10 years. And so I've been to pick people up all over the county and take them to places and get to learn their stories, a little bit about their stories. And you go into areas where you don't normally go. And so it's educational. Just a week or two ago, I took an 89-year-old woman who lives in a subsidized apartment in Burgess Mill in Ellicott City, which used to be Hilltop Housing.
Oh, yes.
And she had to go to the dentist. So she was telling me, I waited there for her. And when she came out, she was very upset. And she said that she had had a deteriorated bridge in her mouth. And she was having pain from what was left of the two teeth that were underneath the bridge. And she went to the dentist and he told her, well, I can fix that for $6,600. And so, you know, she's 89 years old. She's a widow. She lives in subsidized housing. She said she almost fell off the chair because she doesn't have that kind of money. And of course, she has Medicare, but that doesn't cover dental coverage. So she didn't know what to do. So I just suggested to her that she had a grandson. She doesn't have a computer. She's not computer literate. She doesn't have access to a computer. So I suggested she could perhaps get her grandson to help her contact the University of Maryland Dental School, for example. They may do dental work for much less money, mm-hmm. or she could privately buy dental insurance fairly cheap, which I have, for example, and it would be a lot less money. This guy was, I suspect he may not have wanted her to be a patient because I'm sure he knew that she didn't have any money, but those are the kind of things you learn about by talking to people from different walks of life that you encounter. Actually, one woman who had lived here for a very long time, and I took her to the doctor, and we were talking in the car, this was a few years ago, and I was complaining about what I thought were some bug bites that were hurting me on my chest. And she listened to it and she said, you've got shingles. And I had been vaccinated for shingles with the early vaccine. And she was right. She diagnosed it. So, I mean, those are the kind of things you learn from talking to people. You learn about their problems and what kind of medical procedures are going on and where things are located. Another thing I do is participate in Howard County's program called Cycle to Health. It's a bicycling program for seniors, and we've ridden bicycles all over the county to areas that I would never have gone to. So that's also, and met people in that program. So those kinds of activities, if you're retired and you have the time, you can be more informed about what's in the county.
Yeah, well, you're doing
physical.
Now, I used to bike quite a bit, but I haven't for more than a few years.
Now they have these electric assist bikes that have a small electric motor, and you still pedal, but it helps get you up the hills.
It does, huh? I don't think I'm going to be doing that, but I do walk a tremendous amount.
That's good.
From the backyard of our home,
right.
We can access the pathway system through the Middle Patuxent Valley and a couple miles of it, or a few miles of it. And every day, we walk almost every day. And every time we are so thankful to Jim Rouse for all of the land that, you know, what that man did here in this community is just amazing.
Yeah.
For people of all income levels, it doesn't matter. It's
right.
accessible to everyone.
I've had the same thought, especially when the pandemic struck and we were going out walking on paths that we didn't normally walk on, exploring new areas. So there are, and of course, in the bicycle program, we go on these paths all the way. You can get the map of all the pathways on your phone.
Yes, I'm aware
of
that.
And it'll talk to you. It'll tell you, turn right here, turn left here. I haven't mastered that yet, but some of the people have that. So
really?
Yeah.
I have a feeling you'll master it.
I'm not a great tech guy.
You're not? Well, if you ever want any help, just come to me. I'm also...
You'll get Lloyd to help you.
Right? Yeah, Lloyd does all of that for me.
Right.
So, well, once again, I really enjoyed talking with you, and I really am very appreciative of the work you did in journalism. It was very, I know there are some people in elected office who are maybe not totally comfortable with the
media. When they renovated the George Howard building, they eliminated my, if I was a reporter now, I could not just walk into the county council offices like I used to. You have to go to the front office, and then, if somebody wants to see you, then that's fine. But I used to be able to just wander around in the county council offices and go into the executive's office. You can't do that anymore.
And was that the case when I was there?
Well, I don't know. In 86, you still could.
Yeah.
The renovations took place under Ken Ullman, I think.
Yeah. Well, lots ahead for our community. And I'm glad to know that although you're not working as a news reporter, you're still keeping an eye on what's going on, and you're a very participatory resident, and I'm appreciative of that. I think
you
can only benefit from it. I'm hoping to do the same thing.
Good.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. This has been Reflections on Life. We look forward to being in touch with you again in another month.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio